Chapter 14. The Loyalty of a Broken Apostle. Transactor 7Y1. She couldn't see very well anymore. That raised religious concerns as well as practical ones. The practicalities were obvious, because the damage to her helmet and monovisor meant she sometimes had trouble with visual interference and depth perception, and that threw off her aim. The matter of faith was what truly troubled her, however. If any of her overseers looked through her eyes, or harvested the data spools from her skull, they would see corruptions of information. The injuries she'd sustained all those days ago at the Principia Collegiate were a troubling matter as well. The maul had savaged her armour and cracked at least 5 of her ribs, along with inflicting significant trauma to the costal cartilage of another 3 ribs, and shattering her manubrium. She suspected one of her lungs had seized, or failed, because her respiration was always shallow now, and never without pain. Her right arm lacked the strength of the left, and her right hand could no longer grip with the same force. Lastly, at least in terms of significant injuries, she'd had a headache since awakening in the Collegiate's ruins, and it wasn't the dull throb of natural pain that chemical injections could alleviate. This was a brain-deep pulse, like something molten or poisonous had been dropped into her skull and sealed inside with her thoughts. Transactor 7Y1 had initially wondered if it signified brain damage, and decided that it likely did. She was having difficulty recalling some things from before Principia. The date was there, images and sensations of things she'd seen and done over her years of service, but she couldn't remember experiencing them. However, it was her vision that plagued her with near-philosophical worry. Corruption of information was an inefficiency, and inefficiency was a sin against the machine god. A lesser sin, an understandable and forgivable sin, given the woes of battle, but a sin nonetheless. Transactor 7Y1 didn't want forgiveness for her sins. She didn't want to be in a position where forgiveness was necessary. This kept her debating internally, in a detachedly curious way, if it might not have been better had she died. She would already be in the machine god's grace then, a sinless creature with an untarnished record, not poorly recording the world around her, adding the corrupted evidence of her flawed eyes to the great quest for knowledge. By that logic, one might think, it would have been better had she died pure. Except this raised further religious difficulties. She was a soldier of the machine god, and the War Master threatened the machine god's existence. She was flawed, yes, but was it not better to fight for the Omnissiah, even as a broken apostle? By that logic, one might think her purity was meaningless in the wider circumstances of what was at stake. Besides, only in death did duty end. A troubling conundrum. With Principia Collegiate conquered and levelled, her orders distinctly no longer applied. There was nothing to defend. She could sense enough of the war's flow through Vox interceptions and meeting other scattered defenders to know the Horde was advancing upon the Sanctum Imperialis, and there sat the machine god's avatar upon his throne of gold. Wounded or not, Transactor 7Y1 would put herself between the Omnissiah incarnate and the entirety of the War Master's forces, if it came to it. And so she had moved to do just that. The first warband she had linked with, in turn, joined a larger stream of refugees, in turn allying with another convoy, in turn forming up into a column of soldiers and civilians, making one of the last runs to the safety of the Sanctum. At no point had she received new orders from her Martian overseers, and Skitari survivors from other macroclades had no insight to share. Many were as in the dark as she was, similarly cut off from their superiors. Those still in contact with their overseers lacked the capacity to trouble themselves with the existence of a lone vanguard alpha. For days, she'd fought as part of an ad hoc regiment of orphaned tech guard, each of them getting by with others of their kind who weren't really their kind, each of them communicating in a sort of Binharic pidgin dialect, formed from code variances between rival clades. They'd been attacked, not for the first time, but with punishing force. Transactor 7Y1 was out in the dust with the others, firing her scavenged arc rifle, hoping with each blast of energy that the loss of her destroyed radium carbine didn't represent another sin in the eyes of the machine god. Sadly, she suspected it did. And then, at the battle's apex, a little monkey had come scampering out of the ash and jumped on her shoulder. It squeaked in a derivation of Universal Binharic, its infostream a form of pure expression that lacked an accompanying lexicon. Transactor 7Y1 had never spoken to a monkey. She wasn't even certain what it was. But the sound it made, which to human ears would be a chorus of screeching, failed electrical connections, was among the purest data whine she'd ever heard. Something that stripped even sacred Binharic cant back to its source code. It was, with no exaggeration whatsoever, the sound of prayer in her ears. She'd replied in skit code, which sounded practically debased compared to the holiness of the creature's communication, but it was apparently good enough for the monkey. It understood and conveyed that it required her assistance, that its master was in danger, and the direction in which it wanted her to move. Within this expression of code, there was also the suggestion of swiftness, of urgency. Transactor 7Y1 had hoisted her arc rifle and set off at a run. 22 seconds later, she met the renowned Arkan Land. Due to her low rank in the grandeur of the cult Mechanicus, and a life spent largely in forge laboratories and on the field of battle, she had never heard of him. Clearly, however, given the nature of his companion, he was either important, a genius, or both. A further 1 minute and 18 seconds later, the sky exploded, and the fight became a rout. Transactor 7Y1 didn't see, as Land did, a terrifying genetic and spiritual failure whose existence shamed the machine god. Nor did she see Angron, the Primarch of the 12th Legion, drenched in glory or bathed in corruption, as many of the warring legionaries saw. She saw the machine god's son, an unravelling demigod whose physicality broke the rules of reality, a creature whose metaphysics were in flux. She felt the clinging chill of fear, though. In that respect, she was like every other living being there. Angron dropped from the sky, striking the ground with a shockwave that threw Legion tanks aside with the force of an inverted cyclone. The Primarch's immense shadow shape laid about with its massive blade, tearing tanks and knights apart with every roaring cleave. The crashing of that blade meeting iron and stone was the sound of thunder for dozens of kilometres in every direction. The defenders broke and fled, a stream of vehicles and fleeing infantry racing overland for the gates of the final fortress. Transactor 7Y1 watched it taking place from the turret cupola of the Chimera, as her own vehicle rushed towards the silhouette of the Sanctum Imperialis. The cyber monkey was still on her shoulder. It covered its eyes as the winged demonic form raged against the defenders who couldn't break free from the battle. Transactor 7Y1 patted Sapien awkwardly, which it seemed to appreciate. The retreating Imperials weren't fleeing without a fight. Traitor armor pursued them, gunning them down, ramming them, boarding them with cries and howls. A Spartan in the battered black and purple of the Emperor's children tore after the Chimera, its roof scabbed with legionaries unloading small arms fire that rattled and spanked off the armoured personnel carrier's hull. Transactor 7Y1 ducked back inside, pulled the turret around and returned fire with the multi-laser. Useless lasburns scorched their way across the Spartan's front armour. The Skitarius abandoned the attempt almost at once and slammed the hatch open again, bringing her arc rifle up with her. A bolt struck the Chimera's plating in front of her, spraying her faceplate with clattering debris. She cursed at a fresh wave of visual interference and a vicious new gouge across her monovisor. For the machine god's sake, she was half blind now. It didn't stop her firing, but it stopped her hitting anything. Great bursts of electrical energy spat from her arc rifle, slashing past the warriors crowded on top of the Spartan. The enemy tank drew closer, grinding its way faster over the rubble-strewn wasteland, as the legionaries prepared to jump aboard. But the thud of impact came from above. A warrior, in arterial red, hit the Chimera's roof with a clank, his jump pack breathing thick smoke into Transactor 7Y1's face. He didn't stop running. With another two steps, he took off again, boosting across to the closing Spartan. The cyber monkey screeched in her ear. It knew the warrior. He was called Zephon. The name meant nothing to her. This Zephon wasn't alone. Another two warriors thudded down, using the Chimera as a stepping stone to boost across to the pursuing Spartan. Transactor 7Y1 tried to follow the fight as the Blood Angels landed, but her distorted vision registered nothing but inhuman shapes blurring together. She slid down the crew ladder, back into the Chimera's innards. Land was where she'd left him, strapped to the troop bench, his head lolling at the mercy of the turbulent ride. This was acceptable. She could do nothing more for him. She turned to the driver, another survivor, another Imperial Army veteran among tens of millions, separated from his regiment, if his regiment even yet existed. Despite the way the Chimera rocked and smashed over the wasteland, she spared a moment of thought for Envarik, dying due to the aura of her holy weapon. As much as she regretted the loss of her radium carbine, proximity to her was far less terminal to baseline humans now. She couldn't speak to the driver in any way he would understand. She'd lost her data slug days ago, never recovering it from the ruins of Principia. Still, she gave her best approximation of a sound of inquiry, forced through her crackling vocalizer.
"Almost there,"
the driver said. The view slit in front of his face was grey with grime. He peered through it, blinking sweat from his eyes and clenching his teeth.
"Almost there. Almost to the Grand Processional. You hear those guns? You hear that bloody thunder? Those are our wall guns, covering our approach. They must be. They just have to be."
The Chimera bucked as it struck more rubble, hitting the rise with the force of a crash. Transactor 7Y1 was thrown against the side of the crew bay, her previously broken internals crunching unpleasantly, flaring with fresh pain. As she hauled herself back to her feet, she felt the armoured personnel carrier slowing. The engine sputtered. Died. The driver, a man whose name she hadn't learned, was slumped in the seat, his skull shattered where it had smashed against the metal above his head. She didn't bother nudging him to ascertain whether he lived. The mess where the crown of his head had been answered that adamantly and succinctly. The Chimera stalled, kicked once more, and stopped. There was a moment of perfect serenity, where the cyber monkey, hanging from the crew railing by its scorpion tail, gave a frightened screech of expressive code, clearly hoping that the tech guard would do something to solve everything that had gone wrong. On cue, the thunder started up outside, engines groaned past, and something transplanar bellowed long and loud from not far enough away. Transactor 7Y1 was already moving. She hauled out a stretcher from the crew supply compartment, dropped it to the deck, and unbuckled the straps, binding Arkan Land to the troop bench. As gently as she could, she pulled the unconscious figure onto the stretcher, processing but willfully ignoring the fact the demigod out in the wasteland sounded significantly closer. Land murmured something in his delirious half-sleep. This she also ignored. Reluctantly, she slung her arc rifle onto her back, letting it hang on its strap, and readied herself to drag the stretcher over the churned earth for at least a kilometer, most likely more. Sapien tossed her a new weapon, a pistol, of a kind she'd never seen before and had no record of in her archives. The creature screeched instructions for the weapon's use, which she understood implicitly but couldn't quite believe. Concentrated handheld atomics were surely the stuff of beautiful legend. She holstered it within her robe and hauled the stretcher to the rear of the cabin. Transactor 7Y1, half-blind, armed with a gun from Myth and dragging the semi-conscious form of arguably the greatest Martian mind of the age, hit the ramp release and went back out into the dust. Later, she was asked to report on what she witnessed out there. This request would cause her no small discontent, given the damage to her vision. Regardless, Transactor 7Y1 did her best, with a simple relay of coded data, as well as observations that were personal to her in the form of emotions and sensations. Adding these elements to a report was alien to her, but oddly fulfilling. Still, impressions and suppositions formed the bulk of her report, and her recitation was no construction of weighty prose. She kept to the facts, as best she was able to ascertain them. This was what she saw, until she couldn't see anything more. Dust, ash, smoke, Arkan land, lashed to the stretcher, shaking as she dragged him meter by painstaking meter. Armoured personnel carriers rattled past her. One of them, a filthy rhino marked with white scars symbols, rumbled to a halt nearby. Just as its side hatch slammed open, the vehicle detonated and flipped into the air, crashing to the ground on its side. She had no idea if the warriors within had intended to help her or just failed to escape their vehicle in time. She kept dragging the stretcher. It was harder work than marching, hiding, or even aiming and firing. It wore on her damaged limbs and aching joints. Over her shoulder, the great walls of the final fortress turned the horizon black. Almost there, as the driver had said. Almost there. Astarte's warriors closed in on her. She dropped the stretcher when she recognized their slavering Nagrakali, drawing the pistol that the cyber monkey had entrusted to her. They were indistinct shapes, and she squeezed the trigger, the pistol loosing its spite with no recoil, blasting an atomic slug wide of any mark. She felt the gun auto-reloading, recharging in her hands. She tried again, and another shot went wide. The world-eaters moved too fast for her wounded sight to track. Sapiens screeched at her, the Artificimian's meaning crystal clear amidst the mayhem. She adjusted her aim by degrees, saw the cyber monkey scampering across one warrior's shoulders, and she fired. The space marine died. She couldn't make out exactly how, only that he seemed to dissolve with intriguing slowness. The others kept coming. The gun wouldn't fire again. It shivered with recharge. Engines howled. Blood angels, she knew them by the red of their plate, descended on burning turbines. They outnumbered the world-eaters. They beat them back. Crash, 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 went the clash of weapons. Transactor 7Y1 had her hands on the stretcher again, hauling it away, pulling it towards the high wall behind her. She staggered, driven to her knees when she lost her footing in the uneven rubble. It took forever to get back up, though obviously it didn't. Her internal chronometer tracked a mere 6 seconds, a triviality that felt like an eternity. The cyber monkey screeched again. She was going the wrong way, dragging her cargo away from the sanctum. She adjusted, based on the direction of its guiding code. Effort was making her sweat and strain, and that distorted her vision further. She was more than half blind now. It was getting worse. Thunder boomed, the mercilessly beautiful song of the sanctum's wall guns. They deafened her, stealing her second sense, as if the loss of the first weren't enough. All she heard was in the ringing quiet between the pounding cannonades. The anti-grav wail of a jet bike, the rider and legion unknown to her, it cut past with enough speed to tear at her cloak. The throaty chatter of heavy bolters, the piercing strain of Volkite beams, bootsteps and chainswords and oaths for the Emperor and oaths decrying the Emperor as false. It was all one sound, one roar, and it came from all around her. There were statues watching her. She saw their towering outlines and knew them from the archives rather than from the truth of her fading sight. Towering Imperial heroes cast from sanctified Martian bronze, statues of the Terran hierarchs that lined the Grand Processional. She was almost to the wall, almost to the gate. Then came the sound she'd feared. Against all logic, it was loud enough to make a mockery of the great guns, a carnosaur's bellow that could never emerge at such volume from a mortal throat. Her vision was down to conjecture, but she felt the heat emanating from the unravelling demigod, and somehow she felt its rage. It radiated fury the way a plague patient burned with fever. A shadow fell over her. With no recourse left, she threw herself across the body of the man she sought to protect. It was a paltry shield against a demigod's anger, yet her life was all she could offer. And then, though she couldn't possibly have detected such a thing over the drumbeat of the wall guns and the cries of the burning demigod, she did hear it, and from the thousands of cheers that went up around her, the others could see what she could only hear. Transactor 7Y1 heard the beating of feathered wings. An unknown span of time later, she lay with her back to a statue's plinth, bleeding a concoction of blood and oil from old wounds reopened, and from fresh ones she didn't recall suffering. Arkan Land, white with blood loss, sat slouched next to her. His breathing was shallow, his eyes were glassy, but he was awake, just about.
"Can you see that?" Land asked her.
Transactor 7Y1 admitted that she couldn't. She suspected she was dying, and if she wasn't dying, then she was most certainly on the cusp of injuries that would extinguish her ability to fight with the Skitarii macroclade.
"They're retreating," Land told her.
That was good, and Transactor 7Y1 told him it was good. Land continued talking, telling her what she couldn't see. That the Ninth Primarch was there, rallying the survivors, leading reinforcements to cover the refugees along the Grand Processional. That the 12th Primarch had fallen back, unable to come closer, unable to set foot on the great avenue leading into the Sanctum Imperialis. The Emperor's invisible shield still held the exoplanar creatures back for now. Perhaps for the last time. Transactor 7Y1 understood very little of this, but she could tell it was a positive development, and so she confirmed again that it was good.
"You sound sad," Land said to her. "What's wrong? We made it. We're alive."
The idea of a human being able to recognize emotion in Skit code was something she had never considered. In answer, Transactor 7Y1 told him the truth. Arkan Land sniggered. The sound was utterly childish.
"The Omnissiah doesn't give a crap about your visual data being corrupted." "I know the Omnissiah. I know him personally. I've conversed with the Machine God's avatar several times, as it happens."
Transactor 7Y1 was speechless in the face of the man's delusion. She began to wish the foolish fellow would let her expire in peace.
"I can repair you anyway,"
Land added with eerie nonchalance. She turned her head towards him, feeling sinew and servos grinding unwholesomely in her neck.
"What?"
Land asked.
"You're only a skit. Fixing you will take no time at all. It's the least I can do, really. Listen, I don't suppose you've seen my pistol?"